Radio Bilingue presents a town hall with residents of Congressional District 22 in California, a battleground in fight for the Congress. This public forum was recorded live at St. Paul Catholic Newman Center in Fresno, California on October 17, 2018. This is a production of Radio Bilingue in collaboration with Faith in the Valley in Fresno.
Hello, everybody. How are you? On behalf of Radio Bilingue and Faith in the Valley, welcome to this town hall meeting for residents of Congressional District 22. I'm Samuel Orozco. I'm your host with Radio Bilingue. Thank you. We're only 3 weeks away from Election Day. Are you ready to go out and vote?
Yes.
That's super important. Todos a votar. Todos a votar, que nadie se quede en casa. We should go out and vote on Election Day. We in Radio Bilingue are leaving the studios and visiting the community to see how residents feel about the election, and we have chosen District 22 for several reasons. This is a district, a very diverse district. This is a district with a large Latino population. We are almost a half of the population in the district. This is a majority-minority district already, where many in our listening audience, in Radio Bilingue's listening audience, live. And this is a community, again, with a tremendous population demographic power. Second, this is a district with very critical needs. This is the home for farm worker communities that are among the poorest in the state, and I would say the poorest in the nation. Third, this is a key battleground in the fight for Congress. The decisions of local voters will have a tremendous impact in the plans and policies in Washington for years to come. And yet, listeners from the area call us to the station to report that virtually their only source of information, their only diet of information, are the campaign ads, the TV commercials, the 30-second, one-minute TV commercials. So, in an effort to go beyond the campaign ads, we in Radio Bilingue decided to collaborate with Faith in the Valley in facilitating a conversation, public conversation, between candidates and residents from this area to talk about the issues that are front and center in the minds, in the people's minds, in the minds of local voters. We share with Faith in the Valley a mutual interest to help educate voters and promote civic participation, especially among those who are usually not included in the public conversation. And we have a shared mission for community service. And this is this type of journalism, public journalism, we believe is community service. I want to clarify that for this session, we invited both candidates, Republican incumbent Devin Nunes and Democratic challenger Andrew Johns. Only Andrew Johns accepted our invitation. Representative Devin Nunes has not replied to our many requests for attendance, so we're still waiting for the reply. We're reserving a seat for him on the table. To facilitate the session, to moderate the session, let's welcome Salman Khan. He is a community organizer for Faith in the Valley, in the whole valley. Salman, adelante.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Salman Khan, and I'm a member of the Fresno community in Fresno. I would like to start by thanking St. Paul Catholic Newman Center for hosting us tonight and for opening up this great space. I'm here as a member in Faith of the Valley. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, multi-faith, multi-race coalition of over 20 congregations united on principles of justice who work towards a more compassionate, equitable, and thriving Fresno and Central Valley. We are here tonight under a shared belief that there are different forms of inequality and different pains that face local families. We aim to listen to those who are often overlooked and marginalized in our communities. Through different discussions within our families and congregations, Specific areas of concern have arisen that we want our future congressperson, no matter who he may be, to address in the best ways for our families. Tonight, you will be hearing directly from community members on a few of the issues that are important to them. We will be asking our candidate for his views and responses to these issues as well. We would also like to recognize the members of congregations of Faith in the Valley that have helped to make this forum a reality, including St. Paul Catholic Newman Center, St. James Episcopal Church, Wesley United Methodist Church, Maideen Islamic Center, Islamic Cultural Center of Fresno, Unitarian Universalist Church of Fresno, and Temple Beth Israel. And of course, we would like to welcome candidate Andrew Janz for joining us tonight and helping us learn about his views on issues that are important to our communities. Both candidates, Andrew Janz and Devin Nunes, were invited to the forum this evening. And we are pleased to hear from candidate Janz as he accepted our invitation. As we get started, we would like to share a few rules for the evening. As you know, we are nonpartisan organizations, and we do not endorse, oppose, or support any candidates. Also, we want to respect your time, so we will follow our agenda as planned. As mentioned, we will have a few speakers who will share their experiences on a set of issues and pose questions to our candidate. After that, we will all have some time for Q&A from the audience. And perhaps most importantly of all, this is not a political rally. This is an educational community event. We ask folks to remain respectful at all times. Because of that, once the candidate begins to respond to questions, we ask that you hold all applause until the end of the night. Next, I would like to introduce Father Paul Keller for a brief faith reflection on behalf of St. Paul Catholic Newman Center.
I am Father Paul Keller. I am the priest who's part of the pastoral team here at St. Paul Catholic Newman Center. I welcome all of you here to be with us. I also would like to thank our pastor parish life coordinator, Deacon John Supino, who made this room available for being used. He's here if he wants to wave at us. Yeah, thank you for being here. In terms of the coalition of organizations based in faith, working together for the common good on issues that we agree upon, because there's always many issues that any group of people is not going to have complete unanimity on and complete agreement. But we've come together as congregations and churches and communities of faith because we recognize our faith should be a commitment that makes a difference. And practicing our faith is not just freedom to worship, but it's a freedom to take our values and our beliefs and advance those for the common good, because we have a moral obligation to care about one another, to be concerned about each other. Sometimes our sphere of influence can seem small and that we can't make a difference, but our sphere of concern should be expansive. It should include not only our district and our local churches, but it should include the family of humanity. We're concerned about what happens in our world. If anyone is suffering, they are part of us, and we are caring about them and concerned about them. In the Catholic tradition, we have a sacred practice of going into a small booth and wrestling with our consciences, looking at the things that we have done or the things that we have failed to do, and coming to reorient our lives to live better. For all of you who are not Catholic, you also have a sacred task of going into a booth and wrestling with your conscience, of putting your faith into practice in a sacred act where we commit ourselves to human dignity and to the common good. And so we're happy to have this event here today as a nonpartisan event, as not a political rally, but as us responding to our moral obligation to inform ourselves about the issues that affect us so that we can advance and promote a better world, a better society in respect of human dignity and in concern for the common good. So once again, welcome you here. I'm glad we have such a wonderful turnout. Thank you.
Thank you, Father Paul. We appreciate you grounding us for the evening with words of faith and reflection. We are going to dive right into the issue areas that were highlighted as priorities in our communities. Each speaker will share for 2 minutes, and we will ask candidate Jans to respond to each question in 3 minutes. First, I would like to invite Jenny McLowan from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fresno to speak about her family's experiences with healthcare.
My name is Jenny McLowan. I'm here tonight with my family. My husband, Justin, is a teacher. I'm a former officer with the Fresno Police Department. Our 7-year-old son, James, has serious physical disabilities, and we're afraid for his future. Our lives work because of the Affordable Care Act. Our lives work because of Medicaid. And Congress has spent the last 2 years trying to take away the programs that make our lives work. James is technology dependent. What does that mean? It means he's bad at breathing. He's so bad at breathing that every night we hook him up to a ventilator. That's a machine that breathes for him because his tiny body isn't strong enough to bring air in and out of his lungs while he sleeps. It's a life support device in our house every night. Before the Affordable Care Act, most insurance policies had lifetime limits. The insurance companies put a maximum price tag on your life, often a very low one. This was the maximum amount that they would ever pay to keep you alive. Most people didn't even realize that their policies had lifetime limits until they got sick. There is no way to talk about a kid like James without talking about money. It costs money every day to keep him alive. There are medicines and machines and surgeries and caregivers. James hit the dollar value that would have been his lifetime limit when he was 2 weeks old before he ever left the hospital. Million-dollar babies are not rare anymore. Any time you hear about a miracle baby who is alive today and never would have lived at any other time in history, that's a million-dollar baby. Every ACA repeal bill brings back annual and lifetime limits on health insurance policies. That's the secret ingredient that lets them say premiums will go down. Premiums will go down because they won't have to pay to keep very sick children alive. As people of faith, we need to make sure that our representatives will support policies that make healthcare affordable and accessible to everyone. Candidate Jans, what is your position on the Affordable Care Act?
Thank you, Jenny, for sharing your story. Thank you, everybody, for being here this evening. Thank you to the hosts, Radio Bilingue and Faith in the Valley. I was going to ask, just as a starter, if we should wait a couple minutes for Devin Nunes to see if he was going to show up. But I think we've been waiting 10 years for him to show up in the district. Let me start out by saying that I believe that access to healthcare is a fundamental human right. I think I need to say that as a starter. And people like James and James's family shouldn't go broke. They shouldn't lose their homes. They shouldn't lose their jobs because they require access to healthcare. And so that is where I come from. As a person, I believe that the Affordable Care Act has done a lot of good for our communities and for our country. It has expanded health care coverage to millions of Americans who otherwise wouldn't have had it. I think that the Affordable Care Act is a good starting point, but it's not the end. I think we need to do more, and I think that we all recognize that. When we have a new Congress next year, what the new Congress needs to do is to return to regular order. We need to have open hearings to figure out where we as a nation are going to go with respect to healthcare. Let's have open hearings. Let's bring in experts. Let's bring in people like Jenny and James so they can share their stories of how healthcare has impacted their lives personally. And let's look around the world and see what other developed nations do, because other countries do way better than we do with respect to outcomes, with respect to what they as countries spend as a percentage of GDP. I think that we can do the same. And so let's see what they do, but let's come together on this issue. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. This shouldn't be about Democrats versus Republicans. It shouldn't be about red versus blue. This is about the health of our country and its citizenry. And so if I go to Congress, I will support any initiative that will expand healthcare access to Americans.
Thank you, Jenny and candidate Jans. Next, we will hear from Reyes Ubiedo regarding his experiences as a Dreamer student.
Hello, everybody. My name is Reyes. I am a student organizer with a program called Valley Forward. I just graduated from Fresno State with my bachelor's in psychology. I do have a career goal of obtaining a doctoral level degree in clinical psychology. Obtaining my bachelor's degree was actually very difficult. There was many obstacles, given that I am a DECA and I am a first generation student. The biggest obstacle I faced was financing my education, right? Being undocumented, I wasn't able to hold a solid job. And well, that was my major biggest hurdle. For the first 2 years of my bachelor's degree, I was able to receive. I had to pay my tuition out of pocket, 100% of it. The second half of it, however, I was able to receive some help from the California Dream Act. However, it wasn't enough, because going to a university here is a very competitive thing to do, and to get an actual career is even more competitive. As an undocumented student, it's even more. It's like starting a very competitive race with a shot on your foot, right? So I've been talking to a lot of neighbors throughout both Congressional District 21 and 22, and they've been telling me that they have a serious fear, a fear of separation of families from deportation. So my question over here is, what is your position on supporting the California A Clean Dream Act?
Thank you, Reyes, for sharing your story. Let me give a little bit of background on my experience in being an advocate for Dreamers. Even going back to college, I was a young student leader that worked with Gil Cedillo, who was the chief and primary sponsor of the California Dream Act that passed into law in 2010. And so I was part of a group of students who advocated and lobbied statewide for the passage of this legislation. And what we did was go out there and we did what you're doing now with Valley Forward. We were out there registering people to vote, students, and folks, especially in the Latino community, to make sure that people were involved. And so the piece of legislation passed into 2010, and I'm proud of my record in being a supporter of the California Dream Act. We need a federal version of this. And I don't need to tell you all here in this room, but Dreamers are people, are neighbors, are families that have come to this nation by no fault of their own at a very young age. And many of them have even served in our armed forces. Dreamers pay taxes, they contribute to our local economy, they're in our schools, they're in our neighborhoods. They're part of our family. And so I will do everything that I can in my power as a member of Congress to make sure that there is a pathway to citizenship. We need to do it now, and we need to do it right away. It is infuriating for me to see that there are Dreamers who have served in our armed forces that are being deported right now as we speak. And this is disgraceful in the United States of America. These people have put their lives on the line in protection of our nation, and so we need to get this done. We need to do it right away. And by the way, again, I go to the fact that this should be a bipartisan issue. You look at any polling on this issue, 85% of Americans agree that we should do this. The problem is we have a Congress that's unable to even allow this to come to the floor for a House vote. And so we're going to make some changes next year, and I hope to be a part of it.
Thank you, Reyes and candidate Jans. I would like to invite Mara Fabian to share regarding rulings on immigration and public charge.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Maura y soy del condado de aquí de California, de Fresno. Y tengo tres hijos, soy madre soltera. Llevo trabajando 20 años aquí en los campos de Fresno. piscando uvas. El trabajo es durísimo. Me toca trabajar muy duro.
Good evening. My name is Maura Fabian. I live in Fresno County, and I've been working and living in Fresno County for 20 years. I work in the fields. I pick grapes, and it's a very difficult work, a difficult job. And ¿les pagan poco?
Sí, es lo mínimo.
And I get a minimum wage.
Es la realidad de todas las personas que trabajamos en el campo, que somos inmigrantes o residentes, porque quiero que se lleven la imagen buena de las personas inmigrantes.
This is the reality of those of us who work in the fields. I want you to please take with you the image that those of us who do this work, we're actually good.
Que somos personas trabajadoras. El trabajo es bien pesado y nos toca hacer ese trabajo. Nos gusta también hacerlo. No somos, como dijeron, o como se oye que dice que somos asesinos, violadores, o que venimos a quitar el trabajo a otras personas, eso no es cierto. Porque esta es mi vida, yo así vivo, trabajando duro en el campo para mantener a mi familia.
We work really hard, and it's not true that we are rapists or criminals. We work really hard, and this is my life, and I want you to know that that's how it is. We work hard, and we're not how we are portrayed to be.
Ahorita, yo como madre soltera y de mis hijos, y con el salario mínimo que yo gano, con todo esto que está pasando, esta administración que se está viviendo, que esta persona quiere recortar muchos beneficios, mi salario es muy bajo, a veces son $1,200 al mes, pago $750 de renta, casi $200 de biles, entonces tengo que ocupar o necesito la ayuda que están dando, como las estampillas para comida y dinero para mis hijos, para que podamos seguir o tengamos un lugar donde vivir.
I am a single mom. I have two kids born here, but I make very little. I work hard, but I make $1,200 per month. I pay $750 rent, and I barely can make it with my children. So now with these proposals to cut benefits for people like me, it would be a real hardship if we cannot use those benefits that we have.
Por eso yo quisiera que se llevaran una buena imagen y que apoyaran todo esto que se está haciendo para que vean que nosotros los inmigrantes no venimos a quitarle trabajo a nadie ni venimos a depender del gobierno, sino que estamos trabajando muy duro y echándole ganas y apoyando este gran país que nos ha brindado mucho apoyo también.
I want you to know that we as immigrants, we don't come here to use or exploit the public benefits or, you know, misuse the benefits. We come here to work hard. We love this country and we want to contribute. And so I urge you to please help in this effort to keep the benefits.
Y también por eso estoy tratando de ir a tocar puertas en la comunidad de Selma donde estoy viviendo, para animar a todas las personas que están inscritas a votar a que salgan a votar, que no tengamos, ¿cómo estás diciendo? Porque mucha gente está dolida, está lastimada, está defraudada, entonces yo le digo a las personas que hay que seguir luchando, que hay que tener fe y que hay que seguir para adelante. Tenemos que puchar todo esto y vamos a vencer en el nombre sea de Dios. Y tengo una pregunta para el señor James. ¿La regla propuesta de cargas públicas haría más difícil que los inmigrantes indocumentados arreglen su estatus migratorio si utilizan programas públicos como medical, estampillas de comida y asistencia para viviendas? ¿Cuál es su opinión sobre este cambio?
Because I'm concerned about all these proposed changes, I am doing my best to help inform other people, my neighbors, about what's going on, urging them to get involved and to help prevent these changes. And I'm trying to my best, working hard to convince people or bring people to this idea. And I have a question for Mr. Jans. The proposed public charge rule would make it harder for undocumented immigrants to fix their immigration status if they utilize public programs like Medicaid and SNAP and housing assistance. What is your opinion on this proposed rule change?
Well, thank you again for sharing your story. I want to say on behalf of the community, thank you for your commitment to the Central Valley. And her story and her family's story is important, and it's part of the conversation that we need to have as not only a district but as a region. We basically feed and provide food for half of the nation, and we can't do it without the hard working individuals like and the stories like what we just heard here tonight, and so we need to recognize that fact. I think many of us do. But what we have to also recognize is that this story here is the story of millions of Americans that have come to our country in search of a better life. It's the story of my family as well. My parents are both immigrants, and they came in here to the United States in search of better opportunities for their children. And they knew that if you came here and worked hard and contributed to your community, that their children could accomplish anything. And so I was in a similar situation where I was working minimum wage jobs to make ends meet, not knowing if I would be able to pay my bills. And my parents didn't come from better circumstances than that. And so I understand what many folks are going through here today. And so I want to make sure that as your representative in Congress, that these opportunities continue to be protected. And right now, the president of our nation is out there calling Mexicans rapists and criminals. And we have people like Devin Nunes who stand by and are silent on the issue. They don't come forward. People like him don't come forward, don't speak out about recognizing how important the American dream is. And this is why I'm in this race. I am in this race because I want to protect that opportunity for other folks out there. You know, we used to be the country of the Statue of Liberty. We have quickly become a country of hatred and intolerance, and frankly, a country of walls. We are literally talking about walling off our country to the rest of the world. And these aren't American values. And so we need to make sure that Congress acts. And if I am elected to represent this district, I will make sure to stand up for folks that need these services, especially with the Legal Services Corporation, who has been providing these services to our community. And I know how important it is because a judge that I had mentored under in law school was one of the key founding members of the Legal Services Corporation. And so when we're talking about public charge, you can know that I'm going to make sure to be an advocate for this type of representation. And here in the Central Valley, this is part of a larger conversation about getting immigration attorneys here because we have such a desperate need for it in our communities. And I see it every day working in the criminal justice system. There's a complete lack of expertise in this field, and it's really it really goes as a disadvantage to folks who really need the representation. So I want to make sure that these programs are protected. And I promise to do that as a member of Congress.
Thank you, Mara and Candidate Jans. As a reminder, please make sure to write your questions on your index cards, and we will collect them soon. Another issue that is important to local families is the recent ruling on the Muslim travel ban. I would like to invite Jamila to share perspectives from the Muslim community.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jamila, and I'm a member of the Muslim community. And as you know, the Muslim community has been targeted of increased policies that discriminate through a series of executive orders which ban travel from Muslims majority countries. These unjust policies were overturned at different levels of our court system. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court voted to uphold the ban. The impact of this ban and other policies that limit travel and refugees from countries have continued to hurt and separate families. Regarding this decision, the Justice Sonia Sotomayor said that it is similar to the court case which upheld Japanese internment camps. She said that we should not ignore the extensive record of Trump's anti-Muslim bigotry, and we could not turn a blind eye to the pain and suffering. These decisions inflicted upon countries, upon countless families and individuals, include those who are United States citizens. When refugees and immigrants come to this country, they are seeking a safe home and more opportunities for families, just as we all want for our own families. We have members of our own Muslim community in Fresno affected by it. One Syrian family had a relative held at detention facilities after he was detained at the San Francisco airport. A father was kept away from his children, and a wife was left without a breadwinner. Trump administration's position is that this policy kept us safer. However, we know refugees and even our own local families are bearing the negative consequences. When decisions are made to place barriers on families, we are worsening the burdens on their lives instead of providing safety nets for them. Given that Congress has the power to overturn or formalize executive orders, what is your stance on President Trump's travel ban on Muslim majority countries? Thank you.
I think that the Muslim ban is an unfortunate, embarrassing executive order that should be overturned immediately. It doesn't embody the best ideals of what it is to be Americans. And Frank, and frankly, it doesn't keep us safe. It actually makes it harder for us to have partnerships with people in places in this world that we need help from. And so we need to make sure that Congress acts. Congress does have the authority to review and have oversight over executive orders. What is unfortunate about this entire situation is that this entire decision came down to a Supreme Court. And this is why I think people are beginning to wake up and understand that elections have consequences. And because we have a Donald Trump presidency, we have now two appointments under Donald Trump that are going to be on the court for a long period of time. They're going to hold these points of views. So it's so important that we prepare ourselves for the next election in 2020. And we need to begin to lay the groundwork for that now. And I think our first shot at doing that are these midterm elections that are coming up in just 20 days. And it's just so important that we continue to elect folks to Congress, not even just here in the Central Valley, but all across this country, that are willing to go to Washington and hold the executive branch accountable. That is the job of Congress. Unlike my opponent, I don't believe that it's the job of Congress to protect the executive branch, to protect the White House. My opponent believes that that's his job, and he said so much in a fundraiser that was recorded in Washington State. And I think that that is an inaccurate and incorrect reading of the Constitution, assuming that he read it. So we need to make sure that we have members of Congress that actually have read the Constitution and understand their oath and obligation to the American people. But to answer your question, I am opposed 100% to the Muslim ban. It represents intolerance. It perpetuates the hate crimes that we've seen targeted at your communities. And at the end of the day, we're all Americans here. And America was founded on the idea of religious freedom. And we're not upholding our ideals with this Muslim ban.
Thank you, Jamila and candidate Jans. Next, we will hear from Francisco Pineda from the St. Paul Catholic Newman Center regarding climate change.
Hello, my name is Francisco Pineda, and I'm a board member for Proteus. Our mission calls for us to serve the poor and underserved communities in Central Valley via job training and job development. But it's very difficult for them to concentrate on job development, job training, when they're suffering from poor air condition and poor air conditions and water and lack of clean air. My own grandson suffers from asthma, and I'm sure there's many young people that are suffering from poor air quality in the valley. Pope Francis calls for us to care for our home. My question to you, Candidate Jans, is what is your stance on climate change, especially in regards to ensuring clean drinking water and clean air for Central Valley residents?
Thank you, Francisco, for your question. Given the makeup of our local economy here, water is one of the most important issues facing the people that live here in the Central Valley. And I'm not just talking about for our growers and for our farms, but also for communities. As many of you know, there are places in the Central Valley, places in Devin Nunes' congressional district, where people are being told right now to boil your water after you turn on your tap. So this is happening in our backyard in the United States of America, in the richest state in this nation. And so we need to make sure that we have folks that are going to be able to go out there and talk about this issue and actually tackle it. And to address your question about climate change and the environment, you know, I'm talking to farmers and growers on a weekly basis, and the conversations we have vary in degree. We talk about water storage above and below ground. We talk about new conveyance systems. We talk about recharging groundwater aquifers. But one of the things that I think that we can all agree upon is the fact that we can't just simply dam our way out of the water crisis that we have, that we find ourselves in now. Our best and biggest form of water storage is the Sierra Nevada snowpack. And with continued climate change, with continued increased emissions and carbon into our atmosphere, we're creating a situation where we're continually getting less rainfall and less snowfall, which really hurts the Central Valley with respect to getting the water that we need and making sure that we have clean water projects for our citizenry. And so I think absolutely there's a role for the federal government here. We need massive investments in our communities that will not only create jobs, but secure clean water for some of our most underserved communities. I was watching TV yesterday, and I saw a new commercial by my opponent, Congressman Nunes, that said that he has delivered on the water issue. That's confusing because I drove down the 99 today and there were still signs up that said, hey, we still need water. So I don't think that message was communicated to his base. And I think he forgot to roll out the mission accomplished signs. Here's the thing. If our member of Congress thinks that he's solved the water issue, then we're in big trouble. Because the water issue isn't solved, and we need somebody that's going to go to Congress and take this issue seriously. Clean drinking water. I am the only candidate in this race that's supporting Proposition 3, which is going to bring $270 million to this district for clean water projects that you're talking about. So, folks, you have to make the right decision here. You got to research where the candidates actually stand on the water issue, and the water issue is going to be one of the most important factors that I think will decide this race. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Francisco and Candidate Jans. Next, I would like to invite Adnan to ask one more question.
Hello, everyone. Hi, my name is Adnan, and I'm part of the Muslim community in Fresno. We have one more question, and that's a yes or no question. If elected congressional representative this November, would you agree to meet with us to discuss your priorities prior to the new year?
Yes. And let me say something else. I have met with Faith in the Valley, and I think I've attended many of your events as well, and so I want to continue to be a partner. And this goes back to the issue that we need a member of Congress that's going to actually show up in the district, show up to events like this, have a town hall. You all are going to have an opportunity now, I think, to ask questions, and I'm not afraid to be yelled at if I'm not doing my job. Because I can only do my job effectively if I know where you stand on the issues and how I can better do my job as a member of Congress. So you have to hold us accountable. You have to hold all of your elected officials accountable, everything from dog catcher all the way up to President of the United States.
K Candidate Jans, we would like to offer your closing statement for 5 minutes. I'll ask the audience to continue passing their questions to the aisle to prepare for the Q&A section afterwards.
I don't need to tell you how important the midterm elections are this year. I also probably don't need to tell you how important this specific race is. Everybody around the country is watching what is happening in Central California, I think for the first time. And so we have a unique opportunity to not only share with the people that live here in the Central Valley, but share with the nation the struggles we are enduring here in our communities, in our backyards, in our schools, in our homes, in our hospitals, in our courthouses. We have an opportunity to do that because they're watching. And people are asking right now, all around this great nation, if the people of California Congressional District 22 are going to do the right thing. We have a member of Congress now who has been there for the better part of 2 decades. He thinks that he's solved the water issue. He's attacking the free press, going after our key institutions that keep us safe every day, our federal law enforcement agencies, our counterintelligence agencies. He's decided that he is going to be a supporter of Donald Trump over the interests of the people that live here in the Central Valley. And so I don't need to tell you how bad of a job our congressman is doing. What you want to know is how this is going to change. What is my vision for the Central Valley? Well, let me tell you what it is. My vision for this district and for our communities is to raise the standard of living here. I am sick and tired of us ranking at the bottom of every single category that matters, everything from poverty to education to illiteracy. We rank at the bottom because we continue to send the same people over and over to Washington who don't care about us. We send people to Washington who take millions of dollars from corporations, who go there and do their bidding, which is why I've said at the very beginning, I'm not going to take a dime from a corporation, because I know that when you do, you are forced to vote their way when you get there, and you're forced to vote against the interests of the people in the valley, like raising our taxes, tearing down our environment, and supporting an immigration policy that doesn't work for anybody here, not farmers, not immigrants, supporting tariffs. They're going to put our local governments in the hole. That's going to hurt the bottom line of a very important industry, agriculture, here in the Central Valley. So what I can tell you is that if you send me to Congress, I am going to work tirelessly to make sure that we get federal resources here to this region. We send a ton of money to Washington. It's time that we get it back in return for water projects, for our schools, for our hospitals, for our veterans who have served our nation, to make sure that we have a transportation system here in the Central Valley that works for everybody. And so I'm going to go out there and do that. I am free to do that because I am not owned by special interest groups. I am owned and beholden to you, the taxpayer, and the community that I love so much, a community that I grew up in, and a community that I fight for every single day as a local prosecutor. So we have 20 days to go before the most important decision I think that we as citizens of the San Joaquin Valley are going to make in an entire generation. We have to get this right, and I hope to have your support.
Thank you for sharing your insight and responses to these critical issues. We will read each question on these index cards and give Candidate Jans 1 minute to respond so we can get through as many questions as possible. Thank you for your questions. We chose the ones that were different from the ones we discussed. We will not be able to read through them all. The first question is, I am a Clovis resident and was born and raised in Tulare. I am a youth and queer advocate. I often do not feel safe or supported in this region as a queer youth. If elected, how will you advance LGBT rights, especially for transgender, non-confirming people?
Let me just say that I grew up in the Central Valley too, and as a young person of color living in Tulare County, I faced many hurdles when it comes to the issue of racism, and we still see it here today, 20 years later. And you know, for a long time, I thought that we've overcome this hurdle, especially with the LGBT community, and it seems like we're just walking backwards now. And so as a member of Congress, there are things that we can do, things with respect to funding of departments at the Department of Justice, agencies that handle civil rights complaints, hate crimes, especially against the LGBT community. I'm going to make sure that those departments and those agencies are fully funded. And I can tell you as a prosecutor, I've handled a number of cases involving hate crimes against this community. And I will never forget who I represent. I will never forget the values that made our country a great place. And making sure that we stand up for our brothers and sisters in the LGBT community is one of the top priorities for me as a member of Congress.
The next question is, where do you stand in dealing with a federal deficit? Do you agree with the Congress and the administration to slash money from Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid? What would you propose?
So as a member of Congress, I mean, Congress as a whole, they're in charge of the nation's purse. And so we sometimes forget that. We think that the White House is in charge. But Congress is the one that ultimately decides how our nation's money is spent. And I always like to look at it and make sure that we remind folks that there are two components to this, money that we bring in and money that we send out. And so when we do things like give tax breaks to the wealthiest corporations on the planet, when we give tax breaks to billionaires and millionaires who haven't created a single job since Devin Nunes' tax plan went into effect, I think that that does a disservice to what we call fiscal responsibility. And we know that this was the plan from the very beginning to use this as pretext to gut earned benefit programs that all of us have paid into. And we saw Mitch McConnell just yesterday talk about how they're going to be going after Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security next. And Devin Nunes is up there right alongside Mitch McConnell talking about privatizing Social Security, privatizing Medicare, and we know why he's doing it. He's doing it because he's been bought by the corporations and the banks and big pharmaceuticals who are going to take advantage of this situation if that law comes to pass. This is exactly why we need to send more people to Congress who aren't beholden to these special interest groups, people that are going to fight for working class, middle class Americans. And I promise to do that.
The next question is, how will you stay in regular contact with your constituents?
Well, I'm reminded of my opponent's office in Clovis that's never open. So as a first step, I am going to make sure that my office is going to be open to the public. I won't call the police on the clergy when they show up. I won't call the police on veterans either. But I've already pledged to do 2 town halls a year. So that's 4 in a term if elected. And that is, I think, the best way for you all to hold me accountable for any votes or any positions that I take. I'm also going to continue to be accessible on social media and through other electronic forms of communication. I am going to try my best to conduct myself the same way that I've been conducting myself as a candidate for public office when I get to Congress.
The next question is, what is your stance on youth crime as well as public education issues regarding the cost of quality education?
Let me talk about the youth crime aspect first. I think, especially with respect to youth crime, we need to utilize more restorative justice principles. And if we do that, we can begin to reduce overall crime. Sometimes we're putting these kids into the system at a very young age. We send them to CYA or juvenile hall, and they get trained to become better criminals. And then this ties to the education component of the question as well, making sure that we invest, especially in our underserved communities, to break the cycle of poverty and lack of opportunity. We need to start to invest in early childhood development more so than we're doing now. We need universal pre-K. We need programs that support families who are just trying to make ends meet. And I think that if we do that, we can accomplish a lot. But the education system as a whole, I think, needs an overhaul too. I think we need to return to a time where we focus on traditional methods of teaching instead of preparing students consistently for standardized tests and filling in bubbles. We need to make sure that our arts and our music programs are funded and make sure that science and technology is also a priority for students.
The next question says, what efforts will you do to protect unaccompanied children in regards to family separation and in regards to protection during their asylum application process?
I was proud to join Faith in the Valley down at the border to make sure that this president began implementing the executive order, ending his original executive order to separate families. And so when I was down there, you know, I saw the conditions, in part, places that they actually let us in, of where these families were being housed. And if, as you've seen in the news, some of the conditions were very deplorable. And so we need to make sure that we reunite these families. There's a pending court order out there requiring the Trump administration to reunite these families. They're dragging their feet. And so I think that these courts, and I think folks that have been advocates for these families should continue to do what they're doing, bring media attention to the issue, but hold them accountable in the courts. And again, I go back to the fact that the only way that we're going to be able to end these practices is if we elect a new president that really respects American values and not separating families. Again, I go back to the point that this is a bipartisan issue. Everybody thinks it's a terrible thing to separate families, and I just don't understand why Congress can't come together on this issue.
Next question says, we are running out of time to address the climate change crisis. Will you support a plan that includes a carbon pricing like the carbon fee and dividend plan?
You all saw the report out of the UN, I'm assuming, this week. I think they give us until 2040 to curb the issue. That's not a lot of time. And we need to make sure that we as a nation re-engage in the global community. When we walk away from agreements like the Paris Treaty, it really puts our nation and our environment, our planet at risk. And I think our region is going to be disproportionately affected by climate change in the next few years. We've already been affected by it. Look at the long-term drought that we were just in. So we need to make sure that we have folks in Congress, elected representatives, that are willing to look at the science and the data and see that humans actually do contribute to this phenomenon of global warming. The science is there. 98% of scientists in the world agree. If 98% of doctors you saw told you that you had cancer, I think that you would believe them. So this is the same thing, but our planet is at stake. And so I want to make sure that we do support market-based approaches to ending climate change. I'm a big supporter of the Citizens Climate Lobby. I've been working with them since the very beginning, and they have a great approach to working to address the issue of climate change, and they do it in a bipartisan fashion. And a lot of people can get on board with this. I have. I hope you will, too.
Thank you, Candidate Janz, for answering all our questions and spending time with us. Thank you for all the questions. Finally, I would like to invite Reza Nekumunesh from the Islamic Cultural Center of Fresno to help share our next steps.
You all feeling good tonight? First of all, I'd like to thank Candidate Janz for coming. For everybody, look around at the beautiful 300 faces that fill this lobby. Look around at yourselves. Give yourselves a hand. And I'd like to give a big shout out to Salman. He did an amazing job tonight, didn't he? Have we learned a lot tonight? How many of us are tired of the same old, same old? How many of us want some change? We want progression. We want dignity in healthcare, in immigration. You demand whoever will be our next congressman that they listen, that they come, that they care, that they heed, and that they learn and they build with community together. And then we continue to work to keep each other accountable for our work and relationship better not stop after November 6th. We are an organization that builds community by listening. We do not take a charge that hasn't been sounded off by people. We ask, we listen, and then we don't pretend for a minute that we have the answers. We let our people give us the answers. And then we pick up that flag, that standard, and that position, and we run with it in the name of the people in this room, not in the name of corporations or big money or special interest, but in the name of the people most affected by the policies that unfortunately are created, fought for, sustained, and carried out by people who haven't even taken the time to listen to the most vulnerable in our community. So I have a question for you. How many of you actually are willing to do something? How many are you actually willing to do something about the problems that we face and be an agent of change? I'm going to make some masks of you tonight. I'm going to make some masks, and I want you to stand up if the sentence is something you so feel inclined to do. First of all, if you are willing, stand up if you are willing to give just 3 hours. 3 hours over the next 3 weeks leading up to November 6th to come out and canvass or phone bank with one of our local congregations. Dates are up here on the screen and on the back of your agenda. If you're willing to give a measly 3 hours in the next 3 weeks, stand up. Stand up now. Stay standing up. Stay standing up. I want you to stand up if you can make the ever so simple and easy commitment of urging just 10 of your family members or friends to perform their civic duty of voting. Stand up if you can get a hold of 10 members of family or friends and tell them to vote. You have a paper with you. Fill it out. It looks like this. Fill it out with 10 names. Bring it to the back. We'll photocopy it, send it home with you, and then we can track the voting. And easier than that, if you're not standing up yet, I want you to stand if you will just fill out the pledge card that you have received that you commit to vote on November 6th. It looks something like this. Everybody in this room better be standing up right now. Those are three simple acts that you can do. If there is not one of those three things that you can do, there must be something wrong with our message or the way we've gotten it across to you. So I ask that you come up to me afterwards and let us know what it is that we did wrong so we can get you involved before November 6th. I don't believe that there's a single one of us that can't do something. The simplest thing to do is to vote. And if you are not a citizen or you have some other barrier that gets in the way of you voting, you can call people, you can canvass, you can phone bank, you can tell your friends what issues you care about. Every single one of us can call upon our elected officials and tell them what we expect of them, and they tell them they need to heed the words of the people. Walk out of here tonight knowing that you have taken with you, every single one of us, that you are a change maker, that you can be productive, that you can build power, and don't let November 6th approach, arrive, and pass by, not having used every means possible to allow our voices to ring loud. Your voice matters, your vote matters, and you matter, and you need to let those people who represent you know and understand that you will do your part to keep them and yourselves accountable. For just as the chant goes, we are one people engaged in one fight. So one people, one people, one people. Thank you.
Real quick, everyone. Everyone, I'd like to have your attention real quick as we wrap up. I would like to thank everyone who has come out tonight. We appreciate our host, St. Paul Catholic Newman Center, our co-sponsors, Radio Bilingue, and all the faith communities who have helped to organize this forum. We would like to especially acknowledge the work of local leaders like Francisco Pineda, Rosemary Pineda, James Alvarado, Ellis Vance, Vicky Young Condon, Jim Mendoza, Barbara Gallman, and Sylvia Pithode, and all the great volunteers who helped out tonight. And please remember to vote on November 6th. Thank you, everyone, and have a great night.
This has been a Congressional Town Hall meeting with residents of District 22 in Fresno, California. This session on the race to Congress between Republican incumbent Devin Nunes and Democratic challenger Andrew Janz was recorded at St. Paul Catholic Newman Center on October 17th, 2018. This program was produced by Radio Bilingue in partnership with Faith in the Valley in Fresno. Support for this program was provided in part by the WK Family Fund, the James Irvine Foundation, and the Central Valley Foundation. Jorge Ramirez is a sound engineer. Production assistant is provided by Maria de Jesus Gomez. Maria Iraña is Radio Bilingue's broadcast manager. Samuel Orozco is the executive producer. This is Radio Bilingue.